This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Ata, welcome to another episode of Hashtag Politrics on Wow What a Week. Hanging out with our politico, our Pan-Africanist, our Buddhist. Botsang Modimo wa me Moilwa.
Brother Fresh, good morning and good morning. A very chilly morning to the viewers as well.
Exactly.
And I'm good. How are you?
Kishab.
Yeah. No, I'm good. What a week.
What a week.
In the fact, whole world.
In fact, I think let's start with the Olympics, since, yes. I mean, that was the biggest story of the past week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yes. Well, before I even get into the Olympics, let me take this opportunity, one international event, to congratulate the winner of Miss South Africa pageant, Maya.
Oh, yes.
But the most important thing is the paradigm shift that the Miss South Africa pageant have done. And they've done it over the years.
Mm.
They've come with a proposal in the past to include people with, no gender parities, no gender, choosing. They wanted people who are transgender and all that. Now they're first country in the world to, and you know, what is nice about this is that it is not person living with different abilities competing with the counterparts.
Sure.
It was with the real people that are supposedly we are normal.
Sure.
We are abled in such a way and they are abled in another way. And thumbs up to them. They've done a great job. It's a paradigm shift. They've put the country on a space again.
Mm.
But that leads us to another big event that happened, the Olympics. And somebody maybe was asking me, what are you going to discuss on Olympics in your politics platform? There is nothing in the world that's not politics.
I was going to say, the Olympics, by their very nature, are political.
Yes, actually. On their inception, Fresh, from the time the Olympics were founded, in the 1800s or wherever, first of all, they were discriminatory.
Sure.
They didn't include women. I think the first women on the Olympics, they came in the 1930s, if I'm not wrong. I think 1932 or 1936, somewhere around there. Secondly, they were racial.
Sure.
If we recall that black people or people of color were not allowed to participate in Olympics, and when they had an opportunity to do so, we saw the protests. We saw the Muhammad Ali's of this world rising.
In fact, wasn't there also the legendary games, I think, in Berlin?
Yeah, I think that was Munich. When
Hitler was on the rise,
yes.
And Jesse Owens... a black runner athlete from the U.S.
was
one of the heroes of those Olympics.
Yes.
And a Hitler would not have wanted that to see that happen.
Actually,
at the time.
Something happened there that changed the picture of the Olympics.
Yeah.
Despite that Owen, an African-American or a black person from America, was one of the heroes and the winners and the great participants of that, when they were walking towards the podium...
Sure.
And they were supposed to be saluted or greeted by the dignitaries. Adolf Hitler actually refused to greet Owen.
Mm.
But another thing happened post those Olympics time. When Owen had retired, there was a situation where there were another American and European black artists or athletes who actually wanted to boycott because of the discrimination and
sure,
all that.
Sure.
And actually, you know what did the Olympic Committee, that's how racist and how much they were using black people for the benefit, and it's all financial benefit, and I'll get into that, for the financial benefit. The Olympic Committee that did not talk against racism in various countries went and approached Owen, the first black person to can rise in the Olympic torch and a gold medal. They went to approach him to go and convince those who wanted to boycott
the other blacks
to say, forget the politics and go and just go and participate. But what I learned and I liked about that history of Owen was that when he spoke to his black brothers and fellows, he said to them, boycotting the Olympics, staying away from the Olympics, you are actually giving them power.
They win.
Go in there and beat them in their game and beat them on the field.
Sure.
And they became heroes. We know what happened after. You know, there was the Munich once in the, I think, early 70s, where the the Arabs or Muslims and black people, they raise their instead of, you know, singing national anthems and all that, raise their clinch black fists, you know, in solidarity of the black power. So Olympics have been very racial. They've been also, they've been a division of those who are controlling the economy in the world, the Rockefellers as well as the Rothschilds, you understand, on who do they invest with. If you want to see that this Olympic thing, and I'll bring it to South Africa, it's a money-making process and scheme. Look at the peanuts they are paid from this conglomerate-supported event. I mean, for a South African silver medalist in this instance, they got 75,000 rands each for being a silver medalist. But you look
But who do they get the 75,000 rands from?
It's part of their winnings. It's what they get from the Olympic Committee, if you're a silver medalist. Obviously, they will get money from their own countries to say, we will add this, we'll add this. I've seen Botswana have done very well for the, you know, the greatest Olympian of this era, this you know, first person to win 200 meter championship. The government has added, they've given a 4-bedroom house wherever he wants to live in Botswana and other things. But when you look at the money that the Olympic Committee makes in terms of governments putting money there for preparations towards the infrastructure and the sponsors, these are what they give to athletes. It's peanuts.
It's rubbish.
It's rubbish. It's absolute nonsense. They do not even aid those athletes to go there. They rely on their pockets. They rely on private sponsors. Some, they even rely on their governments. And that's my challenge with that. But what happens to the big names that are advertising the Coca-Colas, the Nikes of this world, the Adidas, and many other brands that are putting money in there? Then they will go and target one athlete or two that they will pump minerals. That's why you find some athletes will be aiming after being international, particularly those from the US. They groom them from childhood. They sponsor them throughout their education, whether it's athletic education or it's normal formal education. And you'll find one athlete value, it's hundreds of millions of dollars. And that is not distributed across the continents. And that's where the challenge is. And we see it in South Africa. I mean, one of our athletes now, and people wanted to say it's racially based. I think it's no longer racially based because we have a number of black participants who are there. But we had a white South African woman now.
Oh, Joanne van Dijk.
Yes.
She won silver in the javelin. Yes.
And her family funded it. And you ask yourself, we've got the Department of Arts, Sports and Culture. We've got the South African Olympic Committee.
I was going to say, what's the IOC doing in the country?
Yes. What is that
a Joanne van Dijk would have to fund herself to get to
the Olympics. Herself to go there. You understand? I can't know what happened to domestic competition that makes you qualify and the government moves you. But I liked what Gaitin McKenzie, the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, said. Gaitin has come in after the EFF came with a very good political statement that I'll close this matter with. The minister says one of the first things they're going to do is to refund that athlete who the family paid for her own travel and everything. You know, the whole build-up. Because going to the Olympics is not only your flight ticket and accommodation. It's the whole build-up, your nutrition and everything. But I want to challenge Gaitin McKenzie and the ministry to say, let them not only do it with those who got medals. There are people who went there at their own cost and they didn't get medals. And I think we are supposed to fund them as a nation. You understand? Because they were there representing the country. Absolutely. And we've got a ministry of that. But fresh, historically in South Africa as well, you know, I was saying to people, why are we surprised that we are getting less than 10 medals all the time with a population of about 62 million?
And it doesn't make sense because with the population South Africa has and the resources South Africa has compared to other African countries, the medal tally should be at least double what
it is currently. But the answer to that is very simple. It is the redistribution of those resources. They are not evenly distributed in accordance with the population demographics.
Absolutely.
But also we killed, and when I say we, I want to own up to say when we moved into the so-called democracy in post-1994, We completely killed and destroyed school sports. Mm. You understand? When we grew up, there were almost all sporting codes and activities.
Yeah, it wasn't just soccer and netball.
School. It wasn't just soccer, almost all. Yeah. You understand? Mm. Some, I was in a karate class. Mm. Karate at that time was not part of the Olympics. You understand? It was judo, not karate. But what I'm saying is, all those sporting codes were available in schools from primary.
Sure.
We have killed it, especially to public schools. And I think I want to make a call that government must reintroduce. It must not just be extramural activities. Mm. It must be sport at school.
Sure.
Actually, as a matter of fact, South Africa, I think, is so ripe and have so much resources that we can actually even start having a sporting codes within the curriculum of the school. You don't wait for a person to go to university and study sporting science. Why don't we introduce sport, like athletics, as part of your curriculum or your subject, in case you want to focus in that field?
In fact, similar to what is it, Kuro Hazeldean Pretoria is doing,
yes,
where they are sponsoring Bayanda Walaza, the South African 4x100 meter silver winning team. A matric student.
Yes.
They are sponsoring him to be an athlete.
Exactly.
And that Kuro focuses so much on sport that they will probably give us more Olympians every single 4 years.
Exactly. But again, as we spoke with rugby in the past, if you look at people who represent South Africa at Olympics, majority, a vast majority of them, I will put my head on the block, say over 70% of them, they come from the former Model C schools or private schools or privileged schools.
Sure.
Yeah. And I said, very few of them come from normal public schools.
Yes.
It shows that we are not investing enough as a nation on sporting codes in communities and schools. Otherwise, imagine 80% of South Africans are black people. And we look at the representation on Olympics. It's actually because of the schools that they study at.
And I think over and above the fact that a lot of these kids went to previously advantaged schools, often your parents still have to pay extra
for the extra, over and above what the school is doing. Exactly.
So if your parents are unable to support you at that level, the chances of you even representing your province are minimized.
And Fresh, I can say it with me. When I could afford, all my three sons played soccer. Mm. Two of them are playing soccer professionally. Mm. It didn't just happen because they were good in soccer and what. Because I had to put extra.
Exactly.
They had to go to extra out of the school classes after hours, twice a week, one on weekend. And that costed me money.
Exactly.
And for them to can come to be professional soccer players. And as you said, if we are going to base that on families that can afford instead of the skills and the abilities we have in South Africa.
Sure.
I mean, for example, when I was doing, I don't know what they call it now, standard 3, standard 4, it's senior primary school.
Mm.
We used to have a class where some will do agric, some will do music. Mm. I used to see, because I'm not artistic, some of my fellow scholars will be drawing those musical notes.
Sure.
What happened to that?
Mm.
Because that could have led some of those to be music producers, to be DJs, or music writers. Mm. You understand? So, so those are some of the things that I think we should relook at that will also keep the kids off the streets, drugs, and wrong things.
And a lot of us often give this example. When you look at what Boputaswana did in Mabatu, where they had the Mabana Cultural Center, where the first time I saw a black gymnast was at Mabana.
And by the way, she went up, the black gymnast that went up to rise above, I just forgot her name, Kabo or something like that, was from Boputaswana.
But that's what I'm saying, that the first time I saw a black gymnast was at the Mabana Cultural Center, because a friend of mine was, I think, playing squash at the time. And I think he was in the squash team. I can't remember, like I said, we're kids. I mean, I think I was 17, 18 at the time.
Yeah.
Now, imagine if you were to replicate a Mabana across every township.
Across every township.
Where you have a center of excellence for kids who are talented, kids who are gifted in terms of sport.
And Fresh, after that, we don't even have to worry at tertiary, because we've got centers like the University of Pretoria, the University of Cape Town, the Rhodes, that can provide for that.
Exactly.
You understand? And I always tell people that, Lucas Radebe, one of the finest products that we have produced in the country, the first black person to captain a soccer team in England, which is regarded as the founding world of soccer.
Sure.
Lucas Radebe is a product of Mabana. He's a product of Bob Saul.
Bob Saul put us on a soccer league.
Yes, understand. So I mean, people will sit there and say, look at this two Botswana men are singing praises for Mangope and Bopu Tswana. But that's reality. That's what happened.
Mm.
Most of the musicians that came out of this country when we grew up in the townships, they were producing and recording in the Bopu Tswana studio. Mm. So it's government to provide facilities, enable the environment, exactly. Not only money, create an enabling environment.
That's all.
That will make people... Do you think I got my black belt? Well, I didn't get it in South Africa, but from white belt to brown belt in karate.
Mm.
I was in Motlakeng, I was in the township, there were facilities.
Exactly.
That created and enabled me to be able to
be in the
karate.
And I'm sure at the time, there was even a swimming pool.
It was the only me who couldn't swim. There were two swimming pools, Kokasi.
And they worked.
They are destroyed now.
Mm.
Now they are destroyed. Exactly. So I'm appealing to the government and to Minister McKenzie to say, talk to the basic education ministry, local government or provincial government to can spread it. You can't do it from the top. It has to go to the bottom.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's move to Johannesburg.
Yes.
Mayor Gwamanda has resigned. Some say he's been pushed. Others are saying it was inevitable. He saw the writing on the wall. He did the right thing.
Yeah.
And obviously, Dada Morero's name has been put forward by the ANC to be voted as mayor. But even Gwamanda's party are saying, "Hi, Gwamanda was a better mayor than Dada could ever be a mayor." how do you even determine whether someone was a good mayor or not?
You can, Fresh.
How do you measure that? How do you even measure it? Because Gwamanda is convinced that he kicked butt over the past year.
I'm going to blatantly defend Gwamanda. I've watched and listened to 7 of his interviews this past week.
Sure.
From the resignation, 7.
Mm.
And the man, number one, I've always thought he's a shy guy, keeping it quiet. No. I've seen the other side of him. He is very clear. He can elaborate what he had done.
Mm.
And he is in this administration, the mayor who lasted longer. The fact that he lasted longer than others, it's number one. Number two, what this guy had done, Fresh, if we remember that just a month or two after he took over office, there was that explosion in downtown Joburg.
Mm.
Then there was a building collapse. And there were many things that
happened. There was a fire on the freeway, on the M2.
Exactly, the gas.
The M1.
Yes.
Was it M1 or M2?
It's M1. The gas leak and all that. But there was also instability because there was no outright winner in politics.
Okay.
And he comes from a minority party, which it was a gentleman's agreement. They all agreed that he was a transitional or temporary. They all agreed. They are saying it now. But when they started, they refused to say that. There was an argument.
Okay, you're saying interim and temporary.
Yes.
Others are saying puppet. Is puppet too harsh a word?
Well, I think puppet is too harsh. Why would you call him a puppet when he was already a member of the legislature or what of the local government? He was elected. His political party deployed him there.
No, because some are saying he was more of a lame duck puppet with strings being pulled still by the bigger parties.
Well, even if they would have done that, I want to sit here and say Joburg was not perfect and was not good at any time after the last local elections. However, Joburg was much more stable under Gwamanda than anybody else.
Mm.
And this thing, some people think this thing, it started when Outer and the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation and the Democratic Alliance, they called for his removal.
Sure.
And I've always said, we have changed mayors 7 times in Johannesburg. Now we are going for the 8th mayor since the last local. Okay, 3 of them, it was unfortunate because they were unnatural. You know, there were deaths of 3 mayors a month after each other. But what I'm saying is, Gwamanda has been part of this. The man knows how the system works. And you don't work alone. Mm. A mayor is measured by the manner he is able to can control the MMCs, because there's an executive that is not an operations person.
Sure, sure.
The MMCs are responsible for operations and for deployment with their HODs and for rendering services. He oversees that. He's like the speaker.
Mm.
Their role is mainly sitting in the assembly or in the what do you call it, the the legislator of the local government.
Sure.
But I don't think he did bad. I think the calls were from the wrong racist side. But let me tell you the unfortunate part of this whole thing. When Outa and the Ahmed Kathrada Foundation called for Gwamanda's removal, they were actually still reeling in pain from the removal of Dr. Mpo, I forgot his
Palatse.
Name. Palatse.
Yes.
The former. And remember, after Mpo Palatse was removed, even Colin Makubele, who was the speaker, was also removed. So there's been instability because of a coalition. But at that time, the economic freedom fighters, they had ditched the ANC, and them and Action SA had donated their votes or collaborated with the Democratic Alliance to run Joburg. And once that relationship became sour, the DA was out of power in Johannesburg, or they didn't have a mayor and another minor party. So do people want to say it was okay when Colleen Makubele was a speaker? She was not a puppet because she was coming from a minority party. Mm. But when Gwamanda is a mayor from a minority party, is being called a puppet. Actually, I saw Colleen Makubele coming in defense of Gwamanda and saying she did very well. Now, this is somebody that we know. She was a high performer in her position. Sure. She's an astute, you know, level-headed politician. Mm-hmm. And he's saying Gwamanda did very well. The ANC itself had said there was cooperation between him. He was doing very well. But what is happening in Johannesburg is what is happening in Gauteng province as well. Johannesburg is in Gauteng, but I'm in the provincial government. The ANC has managed to somersault and come back to power by backdoor by actually realizing that this thing that happened with the GNU nationally, it will not fly in Gauteng. Gauteng is a very complex province.
Yes.
So the ANC in Gauteng, and I listened to TK Nziza and explaining how this thing was well planned, even Gwamanda corroborates what TK Nziza, the secretary of ANC in Gauteng, is saying. Gwamanda corroborates it to say, no, there was a plan. Mm. There was a written agreement. We even agreed that this will be phased off. And once we are ready and we have consolidated all other parties, then we'll come back and change the position without fighting. They are both saying it. Mm. Action SA was not part of the deal, but Action SA, which is a baby of the DA, has realized that the train has left them. The DA has pulled out of government. Now Action SA has come back into your papa. So ANC with its allies or coalition allies in Joburg and in Gauteng, they have actually consolidated power away from the DA. And for me, you know, what does it say, Fresh? It says the DA miscalculated.
Sure.
They are friends in politics, the EFF and Action. They miscalculated that they can rely and bank on those people.
Sure.
And the ANC decided to take the foot off the pedal to let them have their own infighting and differences. Once they were in, the ANC then approached EFF, the ANC approached Action SA, and also there's national dynamics where there's benefactors like the Patriotic Alliance, who are also having seats in, or a seat or two in the Johannesburg legislature, you understand? So I don't think the DA calculated very well in this instance. And I think Joburg is going to be stable. Look, Dada Morero is seasoned. He was a mayor only for 2 months.
Yeah.
He was removed by a court order, if we recall what happened, to bring back Mpo Palatse. But he has been in the legislature and the council for quite some time, and he's a seasoned politician. But I think the argument of political parties, it doesn't matter who's the mayor, who's the speaker, and who's the MMC. It doesn't matter. As long as they both agree, like the president of Al-Jamaa, Mr. I think it's Hendricks, he mentioned that he had a meeting with President Ramaphosa on Tuesday morning after a cabinet meeting. He had a meeting with President Ramaphosa, and they both agreed to say, "Aman, go tell Gwamanda we are now ready that he can hand over back the baton to the ANC." What does it say to me? These political parties are actually fooling their voters and their members. We go, we fight, we vote.
They're doing deals in the back.
Why do we still vote?
Regardless of our votes.
Yeah. Why do we still vote? So I think this is one time I think the city of Joburg is going to be stabilized. There's a possibility that this stability may last until 2026.
We hope so.
I think it will.
Sure. Let's change direction for a second. Kenya, Venezuela, Bangladesh, England, Nigeria. young people saying we've had enough.
Yeah.
There's
offering us.
There's rioting, there's this. There's a heightened level of nationalism from all these people.
Yes.
In fact, I remember, I've got a friend in Bangladesh, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I mean, Bangladesh also, Bangladeshi youth were saying, were sick and tired of quotas. Because Bangladesh had a quota system where certain government jobs were reserved for people who fought in the war of independence.
Veterans. Like we had it in Britain.
Yeah.
People from exile.
Exactly.
And prison. They were having the same.
So I've got a friend in Bangladesh, and for about 3 weeks, messages are sent to him. I had one tick. And then 3 days later, he messages me. He's like, they'd switched off the internet.
We had
zero access to internet.
Yes. Look, Fresh, it's youth of citizens of countries that are taking charge of their youth. That's what is happening. I think youth all over the world are tired of old people and politicians using old methods as well. They are saying we cannot have a country. And look at Venezuela. I mean, I like Maduro. Venezuela is one of the richest countries with minerals, oil. I think it's the second largest producer, the first in the world. And the quality of the oil they produce.
They also produce an inordinate amount of beauty queens. Oh. I think Venezuela have had more beauty queens than any other country on the planet.
They've been won in the last few years. But nonetheless, the youth are saying, what is this working for us? What is this doing for us? We have a problem in other countries like South Africa, where it's being pushed as a narrative by the media and England, by the media to say it is because of foreign nationals. And they don't even say illegal. They say it's because of foreign nationals that you don't have jobs, that you are sharing the resources. That's a wrong narrative. And let me tell you why the capitalist media is pushing that and the wrong media houses are pushing such. They are pushing such in order to make youth not to focus on the actual problems.
Okay.
The actual problems is service delivery. The actual problems is corruption of politicians. Actual problems is government not taking care of the youth.
Sure.
We saw the unemployment figures in South Africa. They came out during this past week that our employment figures have gone up. It's getting worse. You know, in the last quarter, another 8,000 jobs were lost. And by the way, I must quip on this one. More job losses happen in the Western Cape and more job benefits happen in Gauteng. So one day we must talk about it. Where is the DA now? They must come and explain. More job losses in the last quarter happened in the Western Cape. And more job benefits happened in Gauteng. And thumbs up to Panyaza. You know, people were negative. We spoke a lot about that. But the government that's not taking its youth, when they realize that the youth are rebelling or rising, they start saying, no, but it's those illegal foreigners, those who own spaza shops, those who are taking your resources. The youth must ask the government, what have you done to protect us and our economy and our country that foreign nationals must not take those resources? I don't think the problem with employment and poverty and those reserved resources in places like Bangladesh, it is because of foreigners. And like in England, the English youth is talking about, you know, did you hear their slogan? We want our country back. We want our country back. We want foreigners to go, all of them. You hear what they are saying? They want our country, their country back. But their uncles and parents are filling up key strategic positions with double passports in the Republic of South Africa. And we are not rising to say we want our country back from everybody who is not indigenous to this country. We are not saying that. But the youth in England, compared to ones in Bangladesh and Nigeria, if you look at it, and Kenya, they think jobs that are occupied in England, saloons, street sweepers, car washers, all that.
Kebab shops
and domestic servants. The question is, were the youth in England prepared to take over those jobs at that salary? It's the same as the South African situation. Are our youth prepared to take those jobs? They will say, yes, I would rather work to be a cleaner than to starve.
In fact, every time I've gone to England, every single hotel I've stayed at, the cleaning staff are Eastern European.
Yes, they're Eastern European.
And they say because British youth are not willing to do those jobs.
Yes, but again, the same as in South Africa. We go to restaurants, we go to hotels, we go to domestic cleaners. It's not our local people, but it is not because the youth don't want to do that. It is because the governments are not enforcing the laws that will make those youth to can end what is regarded as basic minimum salary and a decent wage
for doing those jobs. And also, for as long as there's no one going to restaurants and checking, give me your employment roll.
Yes.
And how many people here, for instance, have permits to work?
Yes.
How many of these people are getting basic, like bare minimum wage?
Wage, yes.
Because it's easy to take a foreign person who's willing to work for 50 rand.
Who was on the street?
And give them a job. Yeah. They'll take it.
Let me tell you what the Immigration Act says about work permits or business permit.
Mm.
When you get a business permit to come to South Africa, our Immigration Act says, and it's coupled with the Department of Trade and Industry, the Business Act, it's coupled with it. It says one of the basic requirements to have a business permit to come and operate a business, one of the first requirements is that at least 60% of your employees are or should be South Africans. That's one of the requirements. Now, has the government gone to people who have received business permits and monitored or inspect their contract to check that do they employ 60% of South Africans and do they compensate their employees? Now, this is where our constitution steps in. It says employees, basic minimum wage. It doesn't discriminate to say foreign employees can be paid peanuts, but we know it's because they're not organized. Some are illegal here.
They're not going to complain.
They're not going to complain. So I still say the laments of the youth in all these countries, including in South Africa, it is socio-economic ills. It is not because of illegal foreigners or foreigners. It is because the government is failing to take care of their own youth, some of them who are graduates, some of them who have experience, and some of them are capable of doing jobs that are now being occupied illegally. And as McKinsey once said to the business, you know, table of the Stellenbosch people, the very same business people who try and complain that there's farm murderers, they must go and check who's murdering these farmers.
Yeah.
It's the same illegal immigrants that these farmers are employing.
Yes.
And we don't know who they are. They are not vetted. We don't know their fingerprints. We don't know where they come from. And you hire them in your house to clean your house or to do whatever because of cheap labor.
Exactly.
And the next thing they start doing what? Raping. I mean, we've got a case this past week of a national from Ethiopia who has allegedly raped a three-year-old. We've got a national from Bangladesh who shot a child in Soweto this past week. You understand? The question is the people of Soweto, the people of Deep Sloot, and they accommodated those people in their houses as backyard dwellers or even as spaza runners or what. So we also allow it. The government allows it. We also allow it. When these people conduct themselves in an unbecoming manner, we lament that we want to ban them, we want to kill them, and all that. That's not going to solve the problem. We must enforce the law. We have laws. We must enforce the laws in South Africa. The Immigration Act, the Business Acts and all, they're very clear of how people should conduct themselves. We come on social media and we lament that, yeah, these ones are not paying taxes. They are running Nigerian saloons all over, all over Sunnyside and Hillbrook. Who goes to those saloons?
Sure.
Is it not us? But we then come back and lament.
So is what you're saying then that, yes, we do have a crime problem, possibly, but the bigger problem is we have an enforcement problem.
We have an enforcement problem.
If there was enforcement, half of these crimes wouldn't happen.
Exactly, Fresh. They wouldn't. Let's enforce our laws. The laws are there. And when we enforce the laws, we stop illegal immigrants from crossing rivers.
Sure.
We stop accommodating them in our houses. We stop giving them business permits. We stop
the illegal employment of people who don't qualify.
If we stop doing that, then we can stand up and blame the government to say you are not protecting us.
Absolutely.
Because we should not be party to this conduct and this behavior.
And then still be the same people complaining.
And still be the same people who complain when it backfires. You understand? We should not be party to that. I mean, I was arguing with other people the other day to say, you know, to get an illegal ID or driver's license in South Africa, if you are an illegal foreigner. And we are saying, they have illegal IDs, illegal licenses.
Where do they get them?
Where do they get them? Who issued them? Who are the people who are working for government, who are policemen, home affairs officials, road transport, inspectorate, who are the people occupying those positions who are taking chochos, bribes, and giving these documents? It's us. It's us. It's us as public servants. Forget politicians. Mm. It's people like me who are employed to be clerks, to be officers, to be managers in public service or in a municipality. You understand? So so these are some of the challenges we are sitting with regarding youth rebellion. I'm waiting to look at the youth of Mamelodi rising very soon because it has come out that we've got a mini Orania in Tshwane, you know, Kleinfontein.
Yes.
I don't know why people are getting excited about Kleinfontein this past
there.
Week.
It's been
Kleinfontein
there.
Has been there since 1990.
Yeah.
And now people want to blame the DA because there's a court case. The reason it's on the news is because the community of Kleinfontein, they've lost a court case in the High Court.
Sure.
So now it's in the news. Now people are saying the Democratic Alliance has been doing nothing about this. They didn't even oppose the papers in court. Kleinfontein has been there since 1990. Mm. The ANC governed, the DA came back, the ANC went out. It has been there. So they've created mini Orania in my neighborhood.
Mm.
And people are only talking about it now. And the people of Mamelodi, they go and they build a squatter camp next to Kleinfontein. I don't know why not inside Kleinfontein. If you're showing you are rebelling,
sure.
Take your shacks, walk into Kleinfontein farm, build your shacks there.
Mm.
Because it's not, it's illegal now.
Yes.
Let's see what the government is going to do
Absolutely.
When the people go and occupy that land.
We are running out of time, but we have to finish off in Zim.
Yes.
They're about to host the SADC
summit
and take over as the chair.
Yes.
Yes. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, it's routine.
Yes.
You know how does it work? It goes alphabetical.
Ah, yes.
So country A, Angola, will be the first to take the chair and host, then the country Botswana and so forth. So now we are at Z.
Sure.
Or Z, then it will come back after. Mm. But now because of the political situation in Zimbabwe, a lot of NGOs, again, NGOs, And
the true governments,
the real governments, and interested parties have come up and say, and I don't know why I'm doing it now fresh, because 3 years back, President Mugabe, before he passed on, he was the chair of SADC. They are saying, no, South Africa must not allow Zimbabwe to can host the summit and become the chair. And I was sitting there, and I'm like, why South Africa? Why us?
What about the other
what about
12
other,
countries?
15. There are 15 member states in SADC. What about them? They say, no, South Africa has been treating Zimbabwe with kids' gloves. But South Africa itself as a country diplomatically always talks about non-alliance, sitting on the fence, not taking sides.
Mm.
It's the trend. Let the people, I always say, let's not interfere with the affairs of a sovereign state.
Sure.
We can raise our voices. We can use SADC as a platform.
Mm.
We can do that to say, SADC member states, let us vote to exclude Zimbabwe for one reason, A, B, C, D, and E. But let me tell you, it's not going to happen. Not in this lifetime.
Mm.
But there's no way a single member of state in SADC will be excluded because there's complaints from NGOs that there's humanitarian challenges.
How do you, as a South Africa or a Botswana, because the influx of Zimbabweans affects South Africa and Botswana more than any other country.
Yeah.
How do you impress it upon Zim to say, you guys need to do something to fix whatever is broken, because we're bearing the brunt of people
influx,
saying we need to go eke out a meager existence somewhere else?
Look, Fresh, the historically, the challenge of Zimbabwe, didn't start now. It's historically, mainly it's because it's not even about maladministration, mainly. It's because of sanctions. We all know that sanctions imposed on them. That's the main contributor to the economic challenges in Zimbabwe.
Mm.
But what if I was in a position of diplomats to negotiate and engage? Actually, what SADC member states were supposed to do, they were supposed to rally behind Zimbabwe and aid it. For example, a country like South Africa, Zimbabwe is landlocked. It's the same as Botswana.
But then you're going to be accused of propping up a government that is a jackboot mentality.
Now, Fresh, you can give aid to a country with conditions.
Sure.
And me and you in the past, we spoke about how Namibia at the NAMPORT, Namibia port in Walvis Bay, has created a land and space and hectares of land for landlocked countries, Botswana and Zambia. Those kind of cooperation.
Sure.
We can do such in order to aid Zimbabwe, which cannot import. Understand? And also talk to your counterparts there and engage in matters like if resources come, and the nation and the youth is accusing the ZANU-PF government that is corrupt. do not give the government money directly. These NGOs that are making noise and running to courts, if they were putting their monies where it's due, I worked, let me give you an example. I worked for Action Aid International, and so, it was Action Aid Denmark. So I worked for the Danish, and I was stationed in Mozambique. When the Danish funded projects of AIDS and malaria, as well as I was doing building local government, I was responsible for funding and training local in municipalities. Sure. You know what did the Danish do with the money? When they gave me the money to disperse and to train people and to aid projects in the local government, they didn't give it to the local government or to the chief.
So
we will give it to projects directly and supervise and oversee those
projects.
So if
we need nets, anti-malaria nets or mosquito nets, we will go buy the nets
nets and distribute them.
We're not going to give you cash.
And if and we won't even give them to the municipality.
Yeah.
We will go and supervise that the communities of that local municipality or village are the ones who are identifying each other to say, this is a member of our community, we'll distribute those nets.
Absolutely.
Or if it's malaria tablets or medicines, you understand? That's how you do it when you believe that the government in charge is not doing what it's supposed to.
So you're saying find ways of helping ease the load versus just washing your hands.
Yes, we should find a way. Another thing that is making difficult, of course, people must differentiate between the diplomatic relationship between South Africa and Zimbabwe, which I think it's healthy, and the relationship between ZANU-PF and the ANC, which is the same as the Russian Communist Party and the ANC and all that. When President Ramaphosa takes off his national hat, or the ANC Deputy Secretary General Nomvula Mokonyane and the delegation, they go to and endorse ZANU-PF. It's party to party, in a sense. Although people will say, but the ANC is in charge in South Africa. Therefore, why are they doing that? But we can't stop their relationship if they think it's healthy. The other thing that we can do fresh in conclusion to this matter, that is very important, which I heard the Director General of DERCO raised. There are talks now in this summit that is going to Zimbabwe. Something that I've been lamenting about for over 20 years in diplomatic circles. The East African community has a parliament.
Sure.
It has laws and rules and acts that are binding to member states.
Sure.
SADC now in the meeting that is going to happen in Zimbabwe, they are going to have a discussion of establishing a SADC parliament.
Long overdue,
my brother.
Absolutely.
That's where we should be going. I've been singing this for years. I've been in government to say we need binding laws.
Sure.
Not this gentleman's agreement.
Loose agreement, loose gentleman, arrangements.
Yeah. No, that's not going to... SADC is bigger than East African Community. East African Community, the EAC, has about 6-7 member states. But it's not because it's better organized because there are fewer. No.
Sure.
No. It's because there was a willingness. There was a determination.
They're intentional about it.
There was intentional about it. Yeah. Why are we failing? And we have peaceful countries in SADC. Majority of SADC countries are peaceful countries.
Yes.
There's no crisis.
They're carrying on with
it. Yeah, but they need a SADC parliament. We are at a stage where this sub-region of the continent needs to have rules, regulations that are binding.
Sure.
If Zimbabwe said...
With consequences. Yeah.
If Zimbabwe said, we will stop shooting people when it's time for elections. And I said, but SADC undermines itself. Look what they did. A SADC delegation went to Zimbabwe during the last elections a few months back. They wrote a report to say the elections were not free and fair. There was intimidation. SADC itself goes. President Ramaphosa flies to attend President Mnangagwa's inauguration.
Life carried on against
the report of those they deployed to go and observe. And so they are also not serious. As you said, I was so disappointed when President Ramaphosa went to that inauguration against a SADC delegation report that said the elections in Zimbabwe were not free, they were not fair, people were jailed, and there was intimidation.
There's an age-old saying, nothing changes if nothing changes.
Your favorite quotation, my brother.
Full stop. Botsang, where do we find you online, sir?
Thanks, Fresh. Botsang M on all social media handles. And 082-485-9100 on telephone. And then my email is botsangm@gmail.com.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, brother. And
we'll see you in the comments section, interacting and fighting with people.
No, I hardly fight, but when people are out of order, I respond.
Absolutely.
By the way, I must just give a warning. I was talking to the show producer earlier on, but we'll discuss it off air. I may not be available next week, but we probably will make it
work. We'll make a plan. We'll make it work. And we are done with another episode of Wow, What a Week. Thanks for tuning in, coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Shout out to Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for all of the production. Shout out to the show producer, Tabiso Sikwane, to our executive producer, Keletso Modisa King, and to you for tuning in and being a part of the magic. Please comment, please like, please subscribe. Most important, if you want to get in touch, email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves.